Let's acknowledge Gino one more time and this wonderful band, Ed Cusby, just magnificent. Thank you so much. Wow. So for those of you who came in later, Diane called in. She'd had a collision, and she wasn't going to be able. He just stepped in. Aren't we blessed? And Wade just stepped in. We're so blessed. We are so blessed. And what I'm going to begin with today is to share with you, or someone's going to share with you, when a prayer is answered, we call it a demonstration. So it's a demonstration of the principle that we teach here. And so one of our members used our prayer team, and so I'd like to introduce to you Pearl Rothman, who is going to come forth right now and tell you about her demonstration. Pearl.
I've never stood up here, so I'm a little nervous.
Okay, we love you.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'm going to stand down here because the lights are bright. I have, for a few years, been suffering with a condition called diverticulitis. And I found out in February that I was going to have a surgery. And I am a person that doesn't even take an aspirin. So when I heard I was going to have to have surgery, and it was a pretty major surgery, I was very frightened. And so I had let Heather and Patty in the church know, and some other people, to pray for me. And as the surgery date got closer, my anxiety level got higher. And I play tennis, and I love tennis. And so I was going to my last tennis lesson, and the surgery was the next week, and I was realizing that I wasn't going to be able to play for 6 weeks. And so I got to the court, and I was feeling kind of sorry for myself and a little depressed. And my teacher and another student, Susan, was there, and she said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm pretty scared." And so Susan said, "Well, let's pray." And I thought, okay, this is probably as good a place as ever in the middle of the tennis court. And so Susan started praying, and I just closed my eyes and was listening. And as she was praying, I got a vision. I don't know if anybody's ever had a vision. I had really never had a vision before, but just out of the blue, in my mind's eye, came this vision. And it was this huge hand, just this ginormous hand, and I was in the middle of it, just sleeping very peacefully, just very calmly, just, it was like I was being totally taken care of in this ginormous hand. And, you know, and they kept going on, but I just had this vision. So so we finished the prayer, and I didn't say anything to them. I just thought, well, that was kind of weird. And I just went on and played tennis like I usually did. And, you know, it just kind of went through my week. And as my anxiety would come back, I would think of this vision. And the vision kept keeping me calm. So the day of the surgery, I showed up to the hospital, and I'm thinking I'm going to probably freak out, but I didn't. I kept that in my mind, and I was actually remarkably calm. I was actually surprised how calm I was, because usually things like this, I wouldn't be so calm. And I remember as they wheeled me into the operating room, I thought, okay, when I get out of this, I'm going to be so happy, you know, and so grateful. So when I did wake up, I remember I was pretty groggy, but my mind was alert. And so I just closed my eyes, and I started thanking, everybody. I thanked Patty, I thanked Heather, I thanked the church, I thanked God, I thanked Jesus. I probably went on, I thought, for 10 minutes in my mind, thanking. And then this thought came in and said, "And just show me a sign you were there." You know, and afterwards I kind of thought, well, why'd you think that? And I thought, oh, it's just the way I think, I guess. So so I spent the 4 days at the hospital recovering, and as we were packing up, I noticed this little care package from the hospital. And so Eric, my husband, tossed it in our stuff, and we came home. And later that evening, I saw it there, and I thought, well, what is it? I opened it up, and it was just a little thing, a little bag with a notepad in it, antibacterial spray pen, and it had a note, had this note on it. And it says, this is from, I've got to put my glasses because I can't see. This is from the nursing staff of St. Joseph's Hospital. And it says, we care about you. And it says, until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. That was my sign. God was with me.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's so powerful to hear the results of prayer. So powerful. And what a visual. What a vision. So beautiful. My topic today is enlightened relationships, and I have to first start with a disclaimer. I've never had one. Right? Well, I may have some momentarily, but I haven't had an extended enlightened relationship. It's still a goal. And I want to talk to you about what Eckhart Tolle says about enlightened relationships. Actually, The Course of Miracles, Marianne Williams says the same thing. Ernest Holmes doesn't say this. So I don't think it's gospel, but I do want to share it with you. And that is that how they say it is, if you want enlightenment or transformation, personal transformation, you must do it through a personal relationship. Ernest doesn't say that. Ernest does not say that that's the only way. In fact, if that were true, well, Jesus may have had a personal relationship, we've come to find out, but traditionally we don't think of that. We certainly don't think of the Buddha as having a personal relationship. And these are the most enlightened beings ever. So I think that might be false, but what I do know, that here in the Science of Mind teaching, we believe that we're in the world, we don't go into a cave and meditate, separate ourselves from the rest of life, but we practice what we're learning. We practice who we are. We practice the presence where we are in everything we're doing, in our work, in our play, especially in our relationships. And as Kim shouted out, I have a relationship. Yes, I have friendships that are enlightened at times. Hopefully, most times. What he talks about, and I think I do need to mention it, because when we have that feeling of the one, meeting the one, feeling the one, and I remember once I met a guy, and we had coffee together. We'd met the night before, and then we had coffee together at his office the next morning. We'd not been together all night, so sorry. I was staying with his friends. Anyway, I went to his office. We had coffee, and saying goodbye, he gave me a hug, and I felt complete. And I use that so sparingly because I've never even had that idea in my mind that I'm incomplete. But I did feel it. And what Tolle says is that in-love feeling of meeting your soulmate, of being with your mate, is a great deterrent to actually doing the work to have an enlightened relationship. Because what you're doing is you're substituting that momentary connection, that momentary pleasure, for spiritual truth. And often what happens, and I know that I could look at my history, which I don't really want to do, but I could look at my history and go, yes, there were those moments, and then there were the moments of picking apart this person that I supposedly loved because I was trying to make him better, right? I mean, if he only had an education, he would be, if he had better grammar, he'd be, if I could pick out his clothes for him, you know. Well, it's not true. It's not true that enlightened relationships depend on accepting the other just exactly the way they are, which means exactly the way they are not. You accept exactly the way they are. And in his book, he brings up, someone says, well, I want to have a spiritual relationship, but my partner isn't ready for one. And he makes it very clear, it takes one person. It takes one person, you, to make a spiritual relationship. One person to be in the present moment, to be conscious and awake, to have an enlightened relationship. Wow. That's revolutionary, isn't it? It opens your mind that I don't need to find the one, that it might be out there. I need to awaken to the one that is in here. Now, I have to also tell you that what he says is that you do not have to develop a relationship with yourself. And it makes sense how he says it, and then I'm going to tell you what I think. He says you don't have to develop a relationship with yourself, because when you do that, you're causing duality or separation. Because you are me, myself, are becoming two. But I say, put a capital S on that word self, and you absolutely need to develop a relationship with your sacred self, with the presence of God in you. You can't expect that to awaken to it if you don't have an intention of being in relationship to this presence. And in the presence, in the other people that are in your life, imagine what your friendships will be, what your relationships will be, if every moment you're aware of that God presence in the other. Imagine what a great world it would be, because our light will shine. Our light will shine wherever we are. They'll know us. There's something going on with those beings. They seem so full of love. Yes, because we are love. Yes. So I was thinking about this and thinking, okay, and in one of the pages he says, in order to develop presence, and I put a capital P on it so I remind myself it's God in me, it's presence. In order to do that, there are three things that are needed. And there are three spiritual tools that you can use at any time. They are surrender, non-judgment, and openness. Surrender, non-judgment, and openness. There's so many times when we think we don't know a way or have a way, and what's needed is simply to know that you, the human being, doesn't need to know, because the spirit within you knows all and works through you if you just surrender to it. Now, we, especially Americans, even Canadians, don't like that word surrender at all, because until you understand it spiritually, it sounds like giving up. But it's the least like giving up. It's moving inward to the presence of God within you. When you're surrendering to that being in you that is life itself, that thing that was holding Pearl in the palm of its hand and is holding each one of us. I think that's a scripture verse, and I think it's a psalm, but I could be way mistaken because I'm not that biblically accurate. Okay, so surrender. Is there a place in your life where you're meeting resistance? If there is, then this would be a good place to look at, how can I surrender to God right now in this thing? In this thing. What did I say the next one was? So surrender. Non-judgment. Back to the relationships. How often in relationship have we thought or said, if only, you'd be just great if only. If only you dressed different. If only you said a different thing. If only you thought the same way as I do. All of those are judgments, right? Everything is saying, I'm not accepting this other just the way he is or she is. I'm putting conditions on it. So, non-judgment. A challenge we've tried many times here is to do a 21-day fast from judgment. And if I had bracelets to give you this morning, I would, but you can do it without the bracelet. Just think to yourself, you could actually do it with a ring or anything to remind yourself, oh, I caught myself judging. See if you can get through even one day. If you do, then do it for the second day and the third day. You'll be so much happier at the end of 21 days if you can do it. And even if you can't do it, you'll be so much more aware of your words, of your actions, of what you notice, what you put your attention on. In any situation, no matter what, there's far more good in any situation there is negativity in it. Far more good than evil. Far more good than negativity, than deceit, than whatever it is. There's far more. Think of 90% of your life is already good. It's already blessed. And oftentimes what happens, especially if we're in pain, and that includes emotional pain or relational pain, when we're in pain, it takes 100% of our attention. And it's really only like a minuscule portion of our life. Feels like all of it. And it's time for us to go back to center, put your attention on God, and let that light that you are just shine. So live without judgment. And then the third one, to be open. Be open to new ideas. Be open to whatever is coming your way. Be open to the life that is attempting to live through you. Be open. Say yes to life. Say yes to your life, just the way that is and just the way it is not. I was reading a story about, it was written by, told by a grown person talking about his parents. And he said, there was a time when his mom liked to make breakfast at dinner time. My mom did that too, but usually when my dad was away, because he liked meat and potatoes. But, you know, if we wanted to have syrup and pancakes, sometimes dinner time was the time. Anyway, this one particular time, she'd made sausage and eggs and biscuits, and he noticed that the biscuits were burnt, and that what she served her husband was eggs and sausage and burnt biscuits. And he looked at his dad. What was he going to do? And his dad picked up the biscuit, slathered it with butter and jelly, and ate every crumb. He heard his mom apologize after for burning the biscuits. And the dad said, you've had a hard day. They were just fine. I like burnt biscuits. And then, so the child asked the dad, do you really like burnt biscuits, Daddy? His answer was, your mother had a hard day. When she made dinner for us, I was grateful for the dinner. He didn't answer the question. He didn't need to. He didn't need to. So sometimes, when we're open to life, life might give us something like burnt biscuits, and we decide what's more important, the relationship or being right about something, like making this right. Tolle does talk a lot in this chapter about our tendency to undermine our relationships through being right, through judgment, through comparison, through criticism. And remember what I said, it doesn't actually take two, it just takes one to change a relationship. You can change it. you can say today, I'm going to change every relationship I'm in, every friendship. When I'm talking to my sister, I'm going to be positive and connecting. When I'm talking to, you know, you can go through your list of people that you connect with and make a decision. Right now, right in this very room, there's enough love to change the world. Right now. So I'm asking you, will you let your light shine? Yes. Yeah, okay, good. Great, I'm so glad you're going to let your light shine. So in order to do that, are you willing to surrender? Are you willing to be open-minded? And are you willing to be non-judgmental? So Gino said sometimes, and it is so honest because we don't want to give up our judgment because we're right, and it gets in the way of us being love. So it's to work on that place in us that knows it ought not judge, but still is judging. To work on that place and love it so much that only good comes forth. You are the ones to make the difference. Every one of us is here by divine design and divine appointment. I'm really glad you chose to be here this morning. And enlightened relationships, we all have them. And we expand, me included, we expand our willingness to have more enlightened relationships and fewer unconscious moments with our friends, family, lovers, and partners, husbands and wives. It's so good. It is so good. In this, where do you get this presence? Where do you feel it? When you stop all of that chatter and you let God be God in you, your light shines. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. I'm not sure, Ed, if you're going to do what Diane usually does. You are. Okay, Ed's going to set the consciousness, and then I'm going to pray. And so deepening into that one life that is God's life. Let the music simply help you. Be here now. Be in your body. Be aware of your feelings. Let them be whatever they are. And in this holy moment, I speak this word for each one of us. I speak it in the first person, the I am that I am. And this is what I know is true. I know that that great love that God is brought us together this morning so that it could glorify itself as light, as delight, as joy, as connection, as freedom and truth. I know that that I am that I am is in and through and as each one of us. It's our essential nature. It's our essential self. And I know and declare right here and right now that every relationship, from the one with the teller at the bank to the one with the beloved at home, everyone is sacred and holy and wholesome and is filled with presence, with divine presence in the present moment, that there is no other thing but God. And in God's grace, all is well, all is joyful, all is great. The goodness and greatness of God is the truth. And I'm so very grateful that this is so. I'm grateful that it is easy to let go and let God. I'm grateful that being one with God, there is nothing that clouds my vision. I see only beauty, only love, only truth. I'm grateful that this thing that I surrender into is that which I am opening to. And it's beautiful, and it's holy. It's everywhere present. It's a new life, a whole new world through spiritual awareness, this truth and goodness and connection. With my heart filled with gratitude, I simply release this word to the action of law. I know that it's already complete, it's already done. And please join me in saying, and so it is.